Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Under the Fig Tree. I'm Troy.
I'm Tisha.
And we have a great show for you today with two of our absolute favorite people in the world.
Yes.
Here with us, we have Dr. Tim and Cheryl Brewer here with us.
I'm so excited.
I'm very excited about this. And if you guys have followed us at any point, we always have them in at least once a season to discuss marriage.
Yes, very important.
And so they're going to discuss marriage with us here today. And I think they're going to discuss this from a very underrated angle. Most people don't talk about marriage from this angle until it's too late. And so, but before we get started, I do want to make sure we recognize a couple of people. We have a rather large following here for some reason in Germany.
Yes.
We've been picking up a lot of steam in That's Germany.
Great. If anybody's in Wertheim, reach out to us. Würzburg, Frankfurt.
I love it. So we want to say hello to our friends out in Germany. Also, for some reason, Santa Clara, California.
All right.
Yeah.
So we've been picking up a lot of momentum in Santa Clara. So we want to say hello to all those. And just as a personal thing for me, I do want to say hello to my good friend, Michael Westbrook, and his wife, because they listen to us quite often. And if the episode is too short, then I have to hear from Michael about us robbing him of content. And so I want to say hello to Michael and Allison Westbrook in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So today we're going to talk about, again, marriage from a different perspective. But I do want to give Dr. Tim and Cheryl a chance to talk about their practice and tell us how we can find you.
Great. Well, we're honored to be here today. We always enjoy coming to see you guys and talking with you. We feel like we gain a lot from just sitting with you because it makes us think about a little bit more about what we do and analyze what we do. We, of course, are our Judah Care Center. Our website, www.judahcarecenter.org. And we're easy to find, 803-369-6321. Very simple to do. And we're located in Baxter Village area of Fort Mill, South Carolina. And so we moved there about a little over a year ago. And this has been it's been probably one of the smartest decisions that Cheryl let me make. Yeah. So
I love it.
But we of course do individual counseling, marital counseling, and premarital counseling, and what we focus on.
And that last part is the perfect segue to what we're going to talk about today, because we are going to discuss marriage from a premarital standpoint.
Nice.
And I think this is far too often overlooked. I think a lot of times people ended up finding out things about each other after they've tied the knot. And some of those things you can find out before. And so I do want to talk to you guys and I'll ask this simple question. What is one of the main things that people can't avoid? Something that they find out about their spouse after marriage that they could have very easily found out before.
The reason that we are offended by each other. Which is usually something about our temperament, which we've talked about before on here. And it's one of the things we always share our temperament with our clients because we explain how it has helped us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll just give you a very simple example. Because of Tim's temperament, he can zone out. You can be talking.
Did you say something?
Exactly. And he can zone out. Now, early in our marriage, because we didn't do temperament until we were married for 7 years.
Yeah.
There were times I was offended. You don't care. You're not listening. Why aren't you paying attention?
Mm-hmm.
What are you, you know, all of those things. But when I learned it was his temperament, changes everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's not personal.
Exactly. Yeah. He'll do it with everybody.
Right. You don't care who you are.
That's right. So I help him when we're in public and I see it happening. I'm like, okay, baby, let's reel you back in. But it makes it real easy. Like you say, it's not personal.
Yeah.
It's a part of his temperament. And I'll say, okay, honey, tell me where I lost you.
Yes.
Mm. Or he'll say, I went to fixing the problem two paragraphs ago.
Right.
And because it's not always that he's just doesn't care or zones out, but sometimes it takes him down the rabbit trail.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Of fixing it.
Yes.
And so sometimes I have to, he's like, wait a minute, I lost you back at XYZ. Can you go back?
That's awesome. So I have a question. What can a couple expect when they go to premarital counseling? And a caveat to that is, what should they look for? Because maybe everybody can't get to you. Our friends watching in different places can't get to you. Although they do do online and Zoom.
Yes, we okay. do.
Mm-hmm. So that is an option. But what should they look for in a premarital counselor?
You definitely want biblically based.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the number yes. one thing. And we highly recommend, if they don't do temperament, that they at least do something that is individualized about the person's right. temperament, right. about who they are. Because when you know who you are, you understand why you respond the way you do,
right.
why you exactly. think the way you do.
Yeah,
it helps you just as an individual. But then what it does for you as a couple takes it to a whole nother level.
Yes.
And it also needs to be something that, I mean, it would be great to be a one or two and done,
yes.
but you don't know people well enough no. in one or two sessions to help them enough.
Right.
Because we learn so much in the first few sessions. By the time we get to, because we typically do six,
okay.
by the time mm-hmm. we get to the end, we can really talk to them.
Yes.
Got it.
And say, okay, this is with your temperament, with your history, this is what you guys have to be careful of.
Right.
And you can't do that on an in general basis with everybody if you don't know them.
That's good.
That's right. You know, we try to read them as much as we can with the intake document and that first session or so to kind of know where they're at. We believe in taking people at the point they're at and trying to move them forward. You know, our pastor talks about, you know, the chapter that you walk in on me, I might be in a different chapter than someone else might be. And so we try to take them from where they are at and try to move them along and help them mature a little bit. Because some of them don't have a great walk. They haven't done much. They haven't been exposed to, you know, what it is to grow in Christ and to good discipleship. They haven't been exposed to that. And so in a lot of ways, we're trying to help them have, you know, be able to make good decisions, be able to hear each other's heart, but also we want them to make sure that they're growing and that they're not going to stay in the same place. It's kind of like a minister's thing I see all the time. You can sit under anointed preaching and hear the word day after day after day, but what do you do with that?
Yes.
You know, yeah, what do you yeah. do with that? Yeah. And you know, we were just talking this week about a couple that we were working with, and it's like they've had a lot of stuff poured into them, you know, from like going to marriage conferences and things like that. But where were they in applying this thing?
Right.
You know, where are they, you know, what are you going to do with all this information? You get all this information, but you never progress. You never have an action plan. And so that's something that we're going to change within our practice. And Cheryl and I have been talking about how we're going to change this to try to make it even more effective.
I was thinking about premarital counseling, and I have two daughters that I'm wanting to, you know, one day find the right person. And I'm just curious, what are you finding out there that's the biggest obstacle for premarital counseling? Like, what issues are coming up that maybe should be addressed when you're single that could help, you know, the marriage in the future?
That's a good question.
That's a great question. I would say number one thing that pops into my head when you say that is expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we build expectations from so many things, from our parents, yeah. from what we've seen there, from friends and family, from TV, from books, from music, all That's social good. Media. So what of those expectations are real?
Mm-hmm.
What are beyond reality? And what aren't really suited for you? It mm-hmm. might look great in a movie, but that's yeah. not reality.
yeah.
It's not going to happen that way.
Yeah.
Hallmark Channel has messed us all up.
Everybody, you are so right.
Yes.
But if they can get their expectations in focus before, then you're not already coming in disappointed.
Yeah.
To start with.
That's good.
I like that. I think one of my questions, and you already just asked one of my questions, so I just marked that off my list. But the other one of my questions is, and I'm probably putting you on the spot, but is there a statistic, a correlation between the lack of premarital counseling and a divorce rate?
Yes, yes. Okay. I couldn't quote you right now what it is. I haven't seen recent, but it is significant that you've got preparation for marriage, because it helps you with, like Cheryl's talking about, expectations. The thing I like about it is they learn each other's heart.
Yeah.
And it helps in the communication area, because if I hear things that are coming out of them that's not consistent with their heart, it tells me I need to be asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
It tells me I need to be going, okay, did I do something, or did somebody else do something for you, to mm-hmm. you, that I need to go take care of?
Yeah,
you know. And so when they learn a person's heart, they learn that you know they're not feeling attacked when something happens that doesn't sound consistent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for Cheryl and I, that was just a real important part for us
mm-hmm.
In learning. Hey, look. She's upset, but it's not at me, because I haven't done anything, or at least I don't know, and I'm going to ask. I use the phrase, when she gets furious, I get curious. I'm asking questions.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm asking questions. Okay, all right. Do I need to go kill someone? I'm, you know, strike that off the record. I didn't say that. Do I need to hurt someone severely? you know, because someone's done something to my wife, or did I do something I didn't realize I did?
Mm-hmm.
And it may be I need to back up and go, honey, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me?
Yeah.
You know, and let's make this thing right. What do I need to do to make this right? And what do I need to do? Not only in the apology, I need to what change do I need to make within me? Because an apology without change is nothing but manipulation. Yeah. And so mm-hmm. what do I need to do?
Yeah.
What do I need to do within me to make sure that this is not going to happen again? Because I love her. I value her. I don't want anything to happen. I don't want anything to happen to her. And so we have to teach couples, hey, look, this is your number one.
Yeah.
It's not your children. Yes. It's not your job. It's not your career. You know, all this stuff. That's your number one.
Right.
That's yeah. my, you know, as I use the term, that's your true north. You know,
yeah, yeah,
in your relationship, your spouse is your true north. And so we have to learn that.
I will say, Troy, even though I don't know like national statistics,
mm-hmm.
for the people who come into our practice, they are married and having issues. One of our questions is, did you have premarital counseling?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are a few that had the one session with their pastor before they got married.
Right.
Wow.
But mm-hmm. most of them have not.
Wow.
And there are so many we have told, we so wish we could have gotten to you. We would have saved you a lot of pain, because so much of this could have been avoided.
There's a biblical worldview that needs to be in a relationship. And if you don't go to a Christian counselor, you're not going to get that worldview.
Right.
And one of the major components of that is the understanding of covenant.
Yeah.
Yes. It's just, I mean, the world says, hey, let's get married. Yeah, we need to know about communicating better. We need to talk about our finances. We need to know a lot of little things about each other. But if you don't add that component of covenant, what you're getting into.
Right.
I mean, this is the second most important decision you're going to make in your life besides giving your life to Christ.
Yes.
It's your second most. And the thing is that marriage relationship should reflect your devotion to the first most important thing in your life.
Yes, yes.
I have a responsibility when I'm married to her, to glorify him through yeah. my relationship. And if my relationship doesn't keep getting better, there's a problem. There's a problem with your salvation, I really believe, in a lot of ways. And I know that's hard and that's harsh, but my relationship in both of those areas got to constantly grow.
Yeah. I think because I had just taken a note here about covenant, and you started mm-hmm. talking about it, so that's perfect. I'm surprised how many people have actually come to us
Yeah.
To talk about their marriage. And when we talk about covenant, they have no idea what covenant is. And so, I mean, I know you're talking about the importance of covenant and understanding what covenant. Can you talk about that just in a little bit in detail about what the covenant relationship looks like between husband and wife?
Right. And I'll tell you, when they come into our office, we do the, you know, the legal disclaimers that we're required to do as counselors and all that. The next question, that the next thing we talk about is covenant. That's the very first thing before we touch temperament, before we touch anything else. We talk about the importance of covenant. You know, in Ephesians 5:31, it says, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. It is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church."
Mm-hmm.
And, and that leave and cleave is a hard thing for a lot of people.
Wow.
I love my mama. I love my daddy. And, you know, if you're spending more time with your mama and your daddy than you are your spouse, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
I can't know my Savior if I don't spend time with him.
Correct.
I can't. I don't know his voice. He talks about his sheep knows his voice. I can't know his voice if I don't spend time with him. Yeah. I can't know my wife's heart if I don't spend time with her.
Right.
And that means that it doesn't mean that I don't love my parents, but it means that my new most important relationship is with my spouse.
Right.
And also, and we tell folks this all the time, when you're having problems, don't go to your parents.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Don't go to your parents and tell them you're having problems, because what happens is you're going to work these things out, and they're going to sit there with prejudices going, "What are you doing to my little girl? What are you doing to my little boy?" You know,
and
holidays, all of a sudden, there's an awkwardness at holidays and times you get together and you kind of go, "What's going on? This is weird." You created that problem, you know. Go to your spouse and work that thing out. Go find some good counselors and sit down and help you, a minister, whatever, if you need that. But don't take that to everybody else. But that leaving and cleaving is an important part that we talk about with that. And we talk about, you know, there's three real components to marriage: covenant, commitment, and trust. All of those things have to be in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I get long-winded, I start talking about David and Jonathan, you know, and how the importance of their relation, that unconditional love that they had, and how they did exchanges. That's kind of how we...
Right.
That's why we exchange rings. There was an exchange there, you know, in that love relationship. But the thing is we talk about the difference between covenant and contract, you know, and how that contract, you know, contract is for a specific time frame.
Yeah. Okay?
Covenant is for life.
Yeah.
We talk about, you know, how that contract has a limited liability. And in covenant, there's no liability.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we talk about how the contract, it's based on the strength of the parties to hold the thing together. And then in covenant, it's based on the weaknesses of the party, because the strength comes from God.
Yeah.
Okay. We talk about, you know, that contracts can be voided, you know, on mutual consent. Hey, we don't like this. We're just going to walk away. It's like Velcro. We're just going to pull apart and walk away.
Yeah.
You know, but covenant says, no, this goes to death.
Yeah, that's right. So
there's no just you know, giving some feelings and then all of a sudden I'm just going to go away and walk away. That's not it. You know, and so we have to understand, you know, we talk about the importance of understanding that you are doing a very serious thing here. You're not just getting married because it feels good.
You know, and I think that's important, because whether you know it or not, there's laws at work. And because there are laws at work, you have to realize there's a consequence to your actions. So if you're walking away, quote unquote, from that covenant, you are defying a law. You are doing something that is unjust. Now, we don't advocate abuse, and we don't advocate you know, mistreatment or anything like that. We're not talking about those things, but I'm talking about being able to understand that you are entering something that God has put up very high under his blood covenant. You know, so it's the blood covenant that Jesus paid for, and it's the marriage covenant. And it's very important to God, which is why the enemy fights it. And I think that's why we're having this conversation, because if you can just, it's better to not enter into covenant than to enter in and to deal with that, because there's spiritual repercussions that can be, that can happen. And this isn't to scare anybody. You can ask for forgiveness, but there are things that happen and can take place in the spirit that when a covenant is not honored.
Yes.
Okay. When a covenant is not honored. And I'll say this, I want to ask you guys this in relation to, when is the answer no? So I'm in premarital counseling.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And, you know, I'm curious to see, have you run into that? And when is the answer like, guys, you know, no, you know?
We have been blessed that the few times we knew the answer was no, God told them before we had to.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I appreciate how he has led us down the path of what we do, because it reveals that.
Wow.
And so we are so blessed. There was one couple that we were working with, and we were concerned, and we had the hard conversation and towards the end. And I can be a taskmaster. I give some homework, but then I also can call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
And I said, if you guys don't figure out this particular thing that we were talking about, you have no business getting married.
Yeah.
And we cannot be a part of that.
Wow. So it happens.
So they either go work on it and fix it, which in this particular case they did. Absolutely. And we're grateful for that.
Absolutely.
Or, sorry, you don't get our seal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The thing is, it might not be no, but it's definitely not now.
Okay.
It's good.
Sometimes it can be a, it's not that you're not right for each other, but you're not ready for covenant. Right.
And I wanted to get that out there because I want people to understand that that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know, you'd have made all these plans and you're going to this and you get a good pre-counseling session and you're really understanding what's required and you understand that there is a major issue here.
Right.
And before we make this promise, let's work on it.
Right.
Why? You know, I've heard of people saying, well, we're getting married anyway. We're not going to divorce, you know, We're going to just go ahead and get married and work on it in the marriage. Why is that a bad idea? Can y'all shed light on that?
Because it is not going to get better when you get married. It's only going to get worse.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that, that Tim tells them in that first, he says, here are some things that are myths. About marriage, and I'll let you take that over.
Yes, take on. I want to hear the myths.
The myths, you know, there are a few I bring out. First of all, if a couple is in love, their expectations for marriage align.
Nope.
No.
Not. Number two, the good parts of the relationship will keep getting better.
Oh, wow.
That is not true. Very not true.
Not always.
Not always.
It can, but it doesn't mean just because it's good now, it's always going to be good.
Yeah.
Because the little glare.
Especially intimacy.
Exactly.
Yes. Especially intimacy. Just because it's good now, things and bodies change.
Absolutely. And people, we talk about those seasons too.
Yes. And where there's seasons where you may go a little longer than what you thought you would as a married couple.
Right. Exactly.
And so things change, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Number three is marriage will heal the couple's struggles.
I can't see that.
God.
Yeah, I can see
God
that.
God is the only one who can heal those.
That's right.
The marriage itself will not do that.
Yeah.
And most will not take the time to work on the individual struggles. Mm. They just won't do it. And then number four, spouses will complete one another.
Oh yeah,
I just hate that. When
forgive
say,
me, I just
oh,
want to throw up in my
me.
Mouth a little bit. You know, yeah. Sometimes when I hear you complete me, I'm like
Jerry Maguire.
Right? Yeah, it was great in the movie. Like I said, the movies they ruin it. Those expectations,
yeah,
it's all great. But
so it's almost like what I'm missing. This person is going to be able to fill that void.
Right.
And the funny thing is you're going to go into that marriage and that void's still going to be there.
Right.
Exactly.
And you're still going to have to figure it out.
Right. Because you're expecting that person to do something they cannot do.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be, it's all going to be their fault in your mind that they didn't meet all those expectations and everything they did maybe in the beginning in that honeymoon stage where you're doing, we're selling ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing wrong with that. We all do that. You're putting your best foot forward. You're giving your best conversations. You're we take care of ourselves. We make sure we look great for the dates, all of those things. Mm-hmm. Then when you get married, those things change. So if that's what it was based on, you're in trouble.
I like it. I got a couple areas that I did want to look at. One of them, so I got four areas.
Okay.
Okay.
Possibly five.
We'll
possibly
do it.
Five. So let me start with this one. Conflict resolution, right? Because I think that's one of the biggest things that happens in marriage is you're going to have conflict.
Absolutely.
I'm of this mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. I tell young folks, before you get married, you and that person need to argue a few times before.
Absolutely.
I just believe that. You need to have a good argument, too. Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple of them, you know, mm-hmm. and they look at me like, well, why? Well, you need to know how that person's going to behave.
That's you know, very good.
During those arguments yep. and stuff like that. And the reason why you need some other arguments after that is you need to see if that person's going to bring up the first argument.
Absolutely.
When you have the subsequent arguments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? To me, that makes sense.
Yes.
But as your approach to premarital conflict resolution, what are some tips that you give to some of the people, not just younger people, but people in general mm-hmm. when it comes to conflict resolution?
One of the things that we encourage folks is to don't rush into this thing quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Go through some seasons with that person. You need some time. You need to see how they react to different times, different yeah. seasons, different conflicts that happen in their personal lives, how they handle it. You need to have a track record with them instead of just jumping in, oh, we're just in love. Oh, I can't wait. You know, that kind of thing. You need to have some time with them and see that. But that's one thing that I would encourage them with that.
We definitely, one of the things that helps, of course, and we always go back to temperament, because when you learn why you react the way you react, how you make decisions can help you understand how do we deal with each other when we have conflict.
Yeah.
Because that makes a big difference. And we definitely want them to... Some people think that knowing their weaknesses in their temperament means that's my ticket. You know, that's who I am.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
what you get.
Take it or leave it. Yeah.
That doesn't work. That doesn't fly with us. Tim kicks out crutches. That's what he calls those. Those are crutches, and he'll kick them out. Because the reason of learning that is to be flowing in your strengths, not your weaknesses. You need to be aware. Because then you know what your tendencies are. Mine is anger with my temperament. And the Lord helped me with my anger before I even became a Christian. And then before I met Tim. And he always says, thank you, Jesus.
Absolutely.
Because he hears stories of anger that comes because of my temperament that I leaned into. I can't use that as a crutch.
Yeah.
And I can't get angry in a situation, in a conversation, and then say, well, honey, you just know it's my temperament. That's not okay. Mm-hmm. So practicing those things and learning, okay, this is a weakness for me. So if we have conversation, this is where I need to tell you I need a minute.
Yeah.
That's right.
And people need, that's great, Troy, about telling them to practice, because that's when they find out, this is where I have to say I need a break.
Yeah.
And we tell them it's okay to do that. You just don't take a break for a week.
Right.
Right.
Right? Because then you don't come back to it.
Right.
Taking a few minutes. Sometimes it is the next day, depending on the severity. And that's okay. But you can't go without coming back to resolution. Yep. And you don't continue when it gets so heated, you're not hearing each other. And all you're doing is hurting each other verbally over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Then you have a whole another set of situations to deal with, because now you have the pain of what came out during your disagreement compared to what you even started to argue about.
Yeah.
And you've said things that you really didn't mean. You're saying things that you want to get out there so you can win. You get that win-lose mentality. A lot of times when you get in an argument, you move from the rational side to the emotional side, and you will say things on the emotional side that you really don't mean, but there are some temperament types. Once it's said and it's out there,
yeah,
they don't forget. You know, I lived with one of those ladies, and I learned that early on. Be careful what you say, because you will hear it again. You will say, wow. But you said, you know, she's one of those that's, I will say, I never said that, and she will pull out the file drawer in her brain and go, on December 7th, 2012, you said at 7:30 p.m. you were wearing a blue shirt and blue jeans and those ugly sneakers that I've always hated. You said blah, 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 blah. And so I learn I have to be very careful what I say. There are times when I get angry and I'll say, I need a minute. And she'll say, why? I said, because I love you too much to say what's coming in my brain, because I know it's not right. Mm-hmm. And I respect you so much, I don't want to hurt you that way. So give me a minute.
Yeah.
And of course, she's that kind of goes, what's he thinking? Oh my goodness. Yeah. You know, but at least I didn't put it out there.
Yeah.
True. At least I don't have to go back to work through the forgiveness process and make up with her. And I've learned the hard way sometimes, but I've learned.
And Troy, you brought up some good points that we talk about, and Tim makes a joke about it, and I don't forget anything. It is part of any of you out there who have the melancholy brain. You understand, it doesn't mean you want to remember. You would love to forget a lot of things.
Love to forget it, yeah.
Exactly, yes. But you can't. And he jokes about it. But one of the things that we always tell people, and you mentioned it about the arguments, do not bring up the past.
Right.
Yeah.
Every time you bring up something from the past, you're bringing a dead body into your relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
And it doesn't do anything but stink and contaminate what you have in that moment.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
and good. You can't do that. So we tell people, if you're continually in your mind bringing that up, even if you're not saying it, you probably need to go back and talk about it. Yes. There's not true forgiveness.
That's true.
Because sometimes in the moment you forgive, but in your mind you start thinking about it again.
Yeah.
And you build that up. And not that he's done anything again, but if it's something I keep bringing up to myself in my mind, if I'm having unforgiveness, then I'm going to be mad at him no matter what he does.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to him. And it's not fair to our relationship. So that's where you have to come back and say, honey, I know this was the past. We talked about it, but I need to walk through some more forgiveness with you over this.
Absolutely. You know, you were talking about conflict resolution. A lot of times couples handle conflict the way they've seen their parents handle it.
Yep.
Yes.
And that's not always healthy, you know. And as we move on in life with more dysfunctional families where folks have walked away from relationships and they're single, been single moms, single dads, raised by grandparents or whatever, you know, all of those things affect the way we handle conflict.
Yeah.
And if there's been, you know, a lot of screaming and yelling and slamming and hitting walls and all kind of things in their life, that's the way you do it. And, you know, I tell couples all the time, the way your marriage is handled is going to be the way your children are going to handle marriage too. Because they're looking for, How do I handle this? Well, mom and dad screamed at it. I guess I'll scream about it, you know, kind of thing. Or dad jumped in or dad would get in and get angry and walk out the door. Yeah, that's the way I'll handle it. I'll just ride off and cool off and then come back, that kind of thing. That's not the way to handle conflict. And so we tell parents, we tell folks as they're getting married, you have a responsibility for those future children and in your relationship to learn how to handle conflict. Because they will learn from what they see. I use the example with my daughter. My daughter learned a curse word. It wasn't from me. Mm-hmm. It was from a cassette tape I had in my car.
It was from you, even though you weren't. Yeah. I'm just clarifying.
I was permitting something to happen. This is back in the day of cassette tapes, for those of you that may be so young you don't know what that is. Go ask your parents what those are, or just Google what a cassette tape was. But I had a James Taylor cassette tape, and it was a live with James Taylor that I rode in my car in my Volkswagen Jetta, and I would go pick my daughter up from daycare, and she would jump in the back seat, and I'd strap her in, and we'd, you know, her little 5-year-old self, and driving her home, and we'd sit there listening to this song, and it had a spot at the very end where the song ended, and he did this little soliloquy at the end, and there was one word that just popped right in there. And I heard that come right straight. As soon as he said it, she said it. And I said, Audrey, hang on a minute. I hit eject, pulled the cassette tape out, threw it out the window, rolled the window up, and I said, we got to talk about this. You don't need to say that word. That's not a good word, and that's Dad's fault. It's not your fault, but you heard it in Dad's car, and it's Dad's fault. And so we had to have a teachable moment with that.
Yeah.
The thing is our children are learning. They're by looking and listening, they're absorbing everything that happens. And so that background, you know, we're maybe sometimes teaching our children the wrong way to handle conflict.
Troy, I know you have other questions, but that makes me think of, if you don't mind, takes me to my favorite homework, and it's after the first session.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about covenant. We've talked about what it means to be married. We've started their temperament. The homework that the Lord has laid on our heart to give them, because we always talk about you learn from your parents, yeah. All of that. What do you want your marriage to look like? So their homework is look at what you learned growing up. What do you want to bring from that? And what do you not want to continue? Mm-hmm. Have that conversation. The reason you have the conversation about it is because that makes you accountable to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
Because generational curses, we always say, do you understand generational curses? We pray against those. But I think we are as accountable for them as our parents, in that if we don't talk about it, if we don't declare what our marriage will be and what our marriage won't be, then we are speaking that into existence in our marriage.
That's good stuff.
That is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so when you talk about family, that's going to be a segue into the next question. What is the role? What do you advise when it comes to family? And what I mean by this is in the premarital counseling sessions, how often are family situations, like future family situations, brought into session? Do you encourage couples to say, hey, mama gets sick and she's got to have somewhere to stay? Mm-hmm. You know, why do we need to wait until mama gets sick to mm-hmm. figure out where we're going? How often does that come into play? And, mm-hmm. you know, different family situations right. like that. Right. What is our role as a couple?
Right.
We talk a lot about what things to look forward and think about.
Mm-hmm.
We talk to them about duties within the house. Hey, you know, 2 months down the road, the toilet is completely black because mom cleaned it at my house and your mom cleaned it at your house. One of us has got to decide who's going to do that. You know, we talk about family roles. But we also want them to look forward and look at things like holidays and things like that. You know, hey, how are you going to spend Thanksgiving? Where are you going to spend Thanksgiving? Where are you going to spend Christmas? How are you going to do that? But we also tell them, hey, look, one thing it says is, you know, by doing that, you are being an honorable child.
Yep.
By talking about these things earlier and saying, hey, look, we're having to navigate, just like you guys had to navigate years ago, how are you going to do that? We're having to navigate this now, so how are we going to do that? And we want to be respectful, and we wanted you to think about it, us to think about it ahead of time, talk about it. But we just bring up that simple scripture, honor your father and mother so that your days will be long upon the land.
That's good.
It didn't say whether you loved them.
Right.
No. It didn't say whether they loved you. It said do it.
Yes.
True.
And that's one of the things when we're talking about, especially when we go into the area of finances, because we touch, that's our fifth session is the area of finances. We talk about, you know, hey, look, how are we going to handle our parents in their old age? That's one of our questions we ask.
Oh, nice.
You know, how we do that. And you know, if they end up having to live with us, we will do what we need to do. We're going to make sure we take care of them as long as we can physically handle it. There's sometimes where there's debilitating diseases where you cannot handle your parents.
Right, right.
It just happens. But as long as you possibly can do that, we believe we need to do that. But then again, we're still keeping good boundaries. And that's another thing we talk with couples about is that even though we're married, we still have boundaries. There's certain, you know, you still are a complete person. We talk about that, you know, you complete me kind of thing. We're still complete within ourselves. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, when I learned that really learned that idea, I learned that I can rely on her strengths to pull me through sometimes when I've got weaknesses.
That's good.
I like that.
All of that is very key. We also, talking about family issues, we talk about now, before you have kids, how are you going to raise them?
Oh, that's
what
good.
What does discipline look like?
Right, right.
And your children are going to be different. Discipline can't look the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. But now's the time to talk about it, because if you wait till they're here, they're going to win. Because they will play you against each other. Yeah. And if they see you don't agree, they've got their foothold.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good perspective. That often goes unnoticed. And I see a lot of marriages struggle with that. I was talking to a couple and, you know, they have a special needs kid. And it just takes a toll on them because they can't be together. One, somebody always has to be with the child. So there's no date nights. There's none of that. And they're having to navigate that with a marriage. And, you know, what does discipline look like? What's too far? What's not too far? What can this child understand, you know, versus, okay, this is outright rebellion, you know?
Sure. Yeah,
so really navigating those pieces can be tough, and having those conversations ahead of time as to what expectations are. What if we can't date for 20 years?
Right.
Because this child is here. What does that look like? You know, is one of our bills going to be date night bill, you know, and making that a priority to find someone that can, you know, handle maybe just when they're asleep, and date night is just late for us. We go to late dinners and we come back and we do late movies. But something that, you know, I think is key is really addressing those issues and having a foundation. You can't address everything, but having a foundation that, you know, us coming together is important, so that when situations come that may tear up that, or try to tear at that, you have a plan in place to say, no, we said this was important. So if we've got to cut out eating out to pay for a babysitter so that we can be together, then that's what we have to do.
Exactly. Yeah. That's good.
Well, I'm glad you brought the children up, because, again, that's in my notes. So I'm surprised how often we run into people that have been married and they didn't know if their spouse even wanted children.
Yeah.
Let alone how many children. Nobody had an idea going into it that they even wanted children. And so this is the world we live in now, right? So I when you talk about how to raise the children, don't necessarily want to look at it from the traditional family setting. What I want to dig into a little bit is the blended family. When it comes into that, and now, all right, you're bringing your children, your small children, into this relationship. And now I got to be dad to these kids. What's the boundaries there? What are those conversations like? That's what I want to know.
It's like trying to change a tire on a car while it's moving and it's on fire.
Oh, God, no. I love it.
That's when we were talking back during COVID, we were talking, you know, of course, my background's education and teaching and all that. And somebody was asking me, you know, how is it for teachers right now? And that was the description that I gave them. And they were like, really? I said, yeah, this is difficult, because they're navigating something they've never been prepared for. In fact, none of us have ever been prepared for going and for doing anything like Zoom sessions for teaching and all of that. And here I am, I was a school band director, and I'm sitting here, you know, as a school band director, watching teachers trying to teach embouchure on the other side of a screen. They can't even get close to the kid and help them form it properly and do that. And so, you know, it was a struggle. But marriage, we have a lot of folks it's very difficult when you're bringing two families and trying to blend them together, because you have limitations on how far you can go with discipline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have jealousy. You love these children better than you love me. Yeah. You know, and you know, all of those things. And there have to be constant conversations, you know, in relationships between the spouses to have a plan. You know, premarital, big thing is just learning how to have a plan for what's going to come forward, so it doesn't catch you off guard.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing. Like, we have to have a plan for how we're going to spend our money. We have to have a plan for how intimacy is going, what that's going to look like. We have to have a plan for all this. And then you start blending two families together. It's a difficult thing. There's so much to unpack there. We could probably do a whole podcast and still not get, you know, the gist of that.
Season 5, then.
We'll see.
We have our content for season 5. I love it.
I could say to that, we are blended family.
Yeah, we are.
Tim brought two beautiful children, and I brought a cat. So, I was completely blessed. I never had to fight for their love. Sorry. God was just all in our relationship, and I'm so grateful for that. They are my children. They are my spiritual children, without a doubt. But one of the things that attracted me to Tim when we were getting to know each other was who he was as a father.
Yeah.
That was so important. I saw his love for young people. I saw his love for his children. And what I loved about him was, now, I wasn't there the whole time, so I can't say he did everything right. And I think he's admitted he didn't get everything right. Yeah. But as he figured some things out, one of the most important things he told his children when their mom was about to remarry is, you do not have to not love him to love me. There is enough love in your heart for both of us.
That's beautiful.
I love that.
And that is the bottom line, because kids think they're being disloyal to their parent with the step parent.
Right.
And that is huge to help them get a lot away from a lot of what the enemy will bring against them. To think about the jealousy, to think about you're not important, and all of those things, that is the first barrier to get through that, is to let them know it's okay for you to love your stepmom, your stepdad, and still love me. There's enough room in your heart.
That, I think, is one of the most amazing pieces of advice, I think, that, you know, that could be given premarital or marital, because you see so many families torn up by that, and the children are just a wreck because mom hates her, so I've got to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And even though they may generally like her a little bit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, but I can't show it, you know? And I think there's a freedom that comes that on both sides, because that shows forgiveness. That shows a level of, you know, forgiveness and walking free. So I love that.
I love it too. I do have the big two here that I want to bring up before we go. One of the big two is finances.
Mm. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. In premarital. So what is your, I'll tell you my one thing I say. I ask, which one of you is the cheapest? Whichever one of you is the cheapest, you handle the money. That's like the advice I give, you know. Yeah. But and it's not, you know, it may not be the best advice, but it, I think it may help you kind of.
It's the safest advice.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. But what advice, and how do you help couples navigate through finances? You know, what are your goals? What do you think our goals should be as a couple? All the, how are we going to pay for college, for the kids, all this? Right. What advice do you give?
Well, that's the fifth session. We do three with temperament. We do, of course, we spend time with covenant at the beginning. We do three with temperament. And the fourth session is communication. We talk about that. The fifth one is is finances. And early on in the process, I will send them a spreadsheet if they're not already working on a budget. And the spreadsheet, I'll tell them on the spreadsheet, this is going to have things you're not even going to be able to approach, because it's going to have information about where your investments are going to be, what retirement's going to look like, how much you're spending on in certain insurances, so that kind of thing. It's going to have all kind of things in there. But we give them a sheet. We send them a sheet, and we say, okay, do these sheets separately.
It's a questionnaire.
Okay.
And it has about 30 questions on it. And I said, do not talk about it. do them separately, bring them to this fifth session, and we're going to talk about them. When we go down the list and ask, you know, asking question after question after question about financial, hey, do you loan money to friends and family?
Oh, mm. boy.
You know,
is it okay to declare bankruptcy?
Mm.
Yes.
Oh.
That's what's the biblical standard?
We cover all of that.
Yeah. That's good. That's good stuff.
You know, just I think we should have the most recent fashions.
Yes, that we can afford.
That we can afford, true or false. You know, things like that. And so we go down the list and talk about those
vacations.
Things. Vacations.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it covers a lot and it brings up a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
Without just jumping on people.
And hopefully they go home and continue those conversations. And
absolutely.
That's, that's what we encourage, is we encourage them to be able to have those conversations between sessions. Oh, should we buy a lottery ticket?
Oh, that's a good one.
Is gambling okay? We actually do those as two separate questions because people see that differently.
Yeah.
So we try to cover all of that, and we will tell them, there are some things that are going to be unique to them as a couple.
Right.
And there are some things that are definite.
Right.
Your answer should be false.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And we do the biblical. This is why we talk about tithing.
Right.
That is part of the questionnaire. Right. Is tithing important? Do we have to do that? So all of those things we try to cover, and some other things in between, to make sure that they are on the same page financially.
Yeah.
And Troy, you mentioned that about, you know, who's the cheapest? And we do, some of our questions are, you know, I should handle the bills. So as you're answering it, is yours true or false? And the same for your spouse. And a lot of times, even if there's one person who handles it, one of the things we tell them is you have to think future. If only one person is handling the bills, if something happens to you, does your spouse know how to go in, sign into all those accounts?
Mm-hmm.
So we make sure if one person handles it, that's fine, but you make sure every information is shared. There's access for both to be able to see bank accounts, bills, all of that. Right. And then with a lot of people, it's split.
Yeah.
You know, you cover a few things, I cover a few things, that type of thing.
Should each spouse have credit in their name? You know, should they have a credit rating? Absolutely, they should have a credit. If something happened to me, I want her to be able to move on, and I want her to be set up, you know, with life insurance on me so that she can have a good life after me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I tell you now, whoever she marries, you know, I'm coming back to aggravate him to death. But I'm not. I'm going to be in heaven dancing around the throne holding a seat for her when she finally gets there. But you know, we have to look at those things. You know, how are we going to, you know, and the big thing now with couples, a lot of them are coming out of school with a lot of student loan debt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they got to learn how to budget.
Yes.
To be able to get that paid off and still have some quality of life. And it doesn't mean, you know, Dave Ramsey says, you know, eat beans and rice and beans until you're debt free, that kind of thing. You know, that's fine. Thank you, Dave. You're a multimillionaire telling me how to handle my money, and I appreciate the fact that you've gone bankrupt and you've come from that. That's wonderful. But that plan doesn't work for everybody in that way, you know. And he says, you know, hey, buy term life and you'll be fine, you know. Well, term life is great, but a lot of folks don't hear that next part. He says, invest the overage, because you got to pay yourself for down later on in life. You know, a lot of folks don't hear that last part there. But we tell them, hey, look, you've got to be careful. You got to be careful with your money. You can still live a good life. Just don't go crazy. Everything is not an impulse buy, you know. If we have a budget and you say we want to buy this, we look at the budget, and the budget is an unemotional way of saying, no, we can't do it this month. Instead of, you don't want me to have something. No, the budget says.
The budget is speaking.
That's right.
The budget has spoken.
You don't want me to have something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's a non-emotional
way. I want a new TV.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, not this again.
Yeah. Is it in the budget, Tisha?
Yeah.
It's in the budget.
Oh, there you go. All right, Troy. You're in trouble now.
Yeah, I often find that a lot of things that I see wrong in the beginning of marriage, and it sounds bad, but it's not bad, is two selfish people learning to live as one.
Right.
Yep.
And so this person's used to having their money. This person's used to having their money. Right. And there is no more my money, your money. There is no more my stuff, your stuff.
Right.
When you guys are going through the financial part of counseling, because I know you more than likely covered that aspect of it, but how much is there resistance there, you know, as far as I'm used to having my own and I should be able to do whatever I want to with my money. How often do you see friction there?
It's fairly frequent.
Okay.
Because one of the things we do ask is, should we combine all our money into one pool and pay bills from that? And we're open with that. We talk about that. And I don't know if there's always a right or wrong answer in the fact that, you know, someone might come into the relationship with a lot of debt and they want to pay that debt off and not put that on their spouse. That's okay. That's cool. I think that's honorable. But
Tim's saying that because that was our marriage. He's trying not to say my name. When we got married, I had credit card debt.
Okay.
And I didn't think it was fair to say, okay, I got your kids, here's my credit cards.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was fair. He did not incur, right? He did not incur that debt. That was mine. And so I said, let me work on that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, eventually we did it and ended up doing it together. But in the beginning, I did not want him to expect that. I think, okay, you're just my money ticket.
Yeah.
Help me pay this off.
And I went back and got this folder today because I wanted to make sure we talked about a few things, but you just kind of keep pulling a piece of it out every so often. When we talk about finances, I pull out an old credit card statement from 2011 that I had, and I show them. It's in black and white. Of course, I ink out my account number and all that stuff. But I show them, hey, look, here is a credit card statement from August the 28th, 2011. I had $12,775.07 balance on it. Okay? And that was, and to give you background on what that was happening there, is that was the time that my father got sick.
Okay.
And my sister passed away in 2002 from ALS. And so it was one guy taking care of this. Mom and dad had divorced. And so somebody had to take care of dad.
Yeah.
So I was driving down, taking care of dad's stuff, buying his groceries, cleaning his house, laying out his pills, handling his finances, all that stuff. And it got to the point that I had to basically take a 1099 job to be able to keep food on the table and to be able to do all that, because there was a lot of traveling back and forth. And so I racked up some credit card debt. God blessed us during that time in that we never went hungry, or our bills were always paid. But I started racking up credit card debt.
Yeah.
And so I say, okay, let's look at this now. So we look at this thing. If you only paid the minimum payment to pay this off, you're going to pay this amount off in 32 years. Okay, so instead of paying $12,775, you're going to pay $23,984 for that same debt.
Wow.
You're almost doubling it.
Insane.
Because folks don't realize a lot of these cards have 29% interest rate on them. They may get an introductory rate, and all of a sudden it jumps. It skyrockets. And then the minimum payment due was only $255. Yeah, we can handle that. But do I want 32 years of that? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, and so we have to learn that, and I show it to them. I say, here, look at it. You know, you can see that. So do you want to be strapped with that? How long do you want to be strapped with that debt? That's going to keep you from buying a house.
Yeah.
That's going to keep you from getting another car. That's going to keep you from being able to live a good life with your children. Do you want to be, is that what you want to do? So you want to think about incurring credit card debt and not letting that build up. And that, there are folks who just, their eyes just get big, you know, they start thinking about that. Oh gosh, I got $26,000 worth of student loans. And I'm like, so think about it that way.
You
got to be careful how you spend your money.
So that's one of the big two. I'll save the last one for now, but I wanted to save this one for last. Let me say it that way. The other one is intimacy.
Knew that was coming.
Oh yeah. I believe it is the number or the top two reasons why marriages end is because of money and because of intimacy. So when you're talking intimacy, with these couples, where do you start?
That is also a questionnaire that we send out.
Okay, got you.
Because we want to cover all areas, or like I shouldn't say that. We want to touch on as much as we can.
Okay.
And this is one area we feel like that as Christians, the church has let people down.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we did, for the most part, in premarital, you don't talk about it. Yeah. It wasn't talked about in our premarital.
No.
It wasn't mentioned at all. And just because we were older doesn't mean that we didn't need to have certain conversations.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in our questionnaire, it talks about, is pornography okay? Is, I don't know how much I can say here. We just talk about how many things are okay and how many things are not.
Right.
That maybe the world makes you think is okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we go back to the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And say, this is why it's not. This is why it is. And, of course, sometimes in relationships, we have to tell them in advance, don't pull out the scripture. Okay, your body's mine, so I get to do whatever I want. Yes. You better obey that, you know, kind of like how people pull out the submit and beat you with it.
Yep.
And that's a whole nother area, because I totally believe in submitting, but only when my husband's godly.
Come on.
That's it.
And
it's
true. We can talk about that another time.
Another time.
But people will bring out the scriptures, you know, and Tim will talk about, you know, abstaining for a while, that you both agree when it's talking about the fasting. And he says that's the only time.
That's it.
Otherwise, you need to have those conversations. It all comes back to the conversation. We talk about, is it okay to do things that my spouse isn't comfortable with? Absolutely not.
No.
Right.
But we talk about all of those things.
That's good. That's good counseling. So
that's really good counseling.
If you're out there and you're thinking about getting married, you need to hit up Dr. Tim and Dr. Cheryl and really, you know, get down and deep and enter this marriage situation aware and armed and ready for the enemy, because they're really tearing down a lot of what the enemy does in marriage. So I love that.
Well, I know the physical attraction and the prospect of intimacy draws a lot of people to marriage, right?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you guys talk about that too? You know, like, why are you really doing this? You know, is that something that comes up during these, or
especially in Christian circles?
Yeah, because I know what, you know, they'll use that passage, it's better to marry than
to burn
with passion.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I got you, but you might start a train wreck by doing that.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we can't say the things that we normally say
absolutely.
On the podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
But we sometimes we refer to that last session as the red face session because we have to broach certain things. And this is not to scare anybody, but I want you to be, if I'm going to send you into battle as a military person, I want you fully trained on every scenario so that you're not operating emotionally. You know, that's one, the cool thing about military is you learn under certain scenarios, you do this. Under this scenario, you do this. So there's no emotion involved. I know if that happens, this is what we're going to do. There's a plan. And unfortunately, when we go into relationships, you know, for premarital, we don't have a plan.
Yeah.
And so everything catches us off guard. We move from the emotional side of the brain from the logical side of the brain to the emotional side of the brain, and we're doing all kind of crazy things. And so when we talk, you know, about intimacy, we want them to talk about it. You know, we want them to understand there are certain things that are good and certain things that are not good, and we use the example of how you will go through seasons. Hormones will change when children come. There's a change in who you are, and there's a change in how do we handle that. All of a sudden, it was us, and then there's somebody in the middle of us, and how do we keep that thing alive when the kids come?
Right.
There's a way of making that priority, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to compromise. It means that I sacrifice for my spouse because I love them.
Yeah.
And to crunch on that just a little bit, we now that I am in the season, everybody knows, if they don't, you know now, that I've been through menopause and menopause, and we can speak to that to couples.
Yeah.
And we talk honest, because we say we feel like if we don't give you the truth, the devil will tell you a lie and you'll think it's the truth.
Right.
And we would much rather be honest with you. And this is, you know, how it can be and some things you'll deal with. I mean, childbirth changes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Things for families, changes your body. So Troy, like you're saying, when it's all about that initial, I mean, let's just name it lust.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Call it what it is.
Lust is not going to last.
Yeah. No.
So if it's all about the physical, if it's all about, I want to be intimate with you, y'all don't need to be together.
No.
You need to take a break. Y'all need to stay away from each other long enough to not fall into that and determine, do I want to be with you because of my heart or because of my flesh?
Yeah. And that's where commitment, that's where that covenant idea of covenant is that we don't throw away. You know, I'm from old school, old generation. You don't throw everything away. You know, I found that out with my dad and my grandfather after they passed away, cleaning up their property. They didn't throw anything away. but we've got to learn that we just don't throw a marriage away just because something's not working.
Correct.
It's like a buddy of mine when I was in that single phase, he said something. He said, just remember, the woman that you're dating, someone is tired of the stuff she's bringing to the relationship. And I went, ouch. I said, and she's thinking the same way. There's a woman somewhere that's tired of the stuff I'm bringing to the relationship too. It works both ways. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
And so we have to learn there's got to be commitment in this relationship, that God has called us to stay in a relationship. And that he is, and if we're willing to just walk away from it, there's a problem with our relationship with him. You know, we're seeing couples, after 50, you know, they have run their heart out with their children, living through their children, taking one to ball practice and one to cheerleading or whatever, and one to band practice and one to volleyball or whatever. And they fall in bed at night totally exhausted. They never have time together. And so when the kids get out of the house, they go, I don't know you. Maybe I just need to find somebody else. If they don't understand covenant, it's easy for them to throw that away, because the world is telling them something they really don't, that's really not right. The worldview, secular worldview says just get rid of it and try and get something else.
Yeah.
Throw it away. But a biblical worldview says there's covenant. No, we're going to fix what's wrong.
Correct.
We're not going to just let it walk away from it. We're going to fix what's wrong. And so that's the big thing, is coming back to covenant one more time and thinking all through your relationship. Go for it.
Well, I do know there are some couples that I've run into where the intimacy thing was a big reason why they decided to get married. And then the intimacy thing in the beginning of the marriage was a big reason why they were so happy. My warning to them comes in this form, because I like to be real with people. Barry Bonds is the greatest hitter I've ever seen. 760 some home runs. Right?
Right.
That's what people look for, with the home run.
Right.
He hit way more singles than he hit home runs.
Right.
You're not going to hit it out the park every time.
Nope.
And so if intimacy is based on that, and that's what your happiness is tied to, you got to remember, I don't care who you are, you're going to have an off night. Mm-hmm. Just right. Happens.
Absolutely.
So what happens when you hit way more singles than you hit home runs, and then as your career goes on, there's less and less home runs and more singles. What do you do then? You know, so it can't be built on that one thing.
Correct.
Something else has to hold you together. And to your point, it's the covenant that you have, the commitment that you've made. Right. So
yeah,
I think that's a good way to talk about intimacy, at least in my mind. I try to talk about it in a way that could be understood. Mm-hmm. I do believe this because the Bible talks about the two becoming one flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And so when God looks at us, he sees one person. He looks at you and your spouse. He sees one person. And the part that goes with that is simply this, is we have to be in the same mindset with all these topics. We talked about finances, we talked about family, we talked about raising children, we talked about intimacy, our minds have to be together on this. because we're one person.
Yes.
The Bible says this, that a double-minded man, that's one person, is unstable in all his ways.
Yeah.
And so if we're thinking different than we should, then we're going to see instability in our finances. We're going to see instability in our intimacy. We're going to see instability. Every area of our marriage will see it because we're not locked in the same mindset.
Right.
And so for any of you folks out there that are planning on getting married, I'm going to try to throw as much business towards you guys as I can. if you're planning on getting married, please don't get married without biblical premarital counseling. The world is not going to be able to teach you the correct way of something about something that God instituted.
Correct.
Amen.
You can't play by different rules and call it the same game.
That's right.
It's a different game once you change the rules. God's already laid out the rules for marriage. We need to find out what he says about marriage and then walk in that. Does it make sense?
Yes.
Makes you guys sense. Have a good time?
Yeah. Had a great time. Troy, can I throw out one more thing?
You absolutely can.
I'll make
can.
It really quick. If somebody's questioning, okay, I've heard everything y'all have said. We can't help. We're really attracted to each other. How do we know if that's it? You know, what else can we use to determine that? We like to ask couples, so what's your purpose? What's the purpose of your marriage? If it's only about we just love each other and we want to spend our lives together, that's great, sure. But God has a purpose for your marriage.
Yeah.
And there should be a purpose statement for your marriage.
Oh, I love
and if
that.
You have that, then that's what you go back to when everything else falls apart.
I love that.
Awesome.
I don't think we can do any better than that to tie it up.
That was good.
I'm Troy.
And I'm Tisha.
We had Dr. Kim and Cheryl Brewer with us, and we thank you all for joining us under the fig tree.